All right. Hey, do you guys know the story? You know the story Alice in Wonderland, right?
Yeah.
It's a pretty fun story as an adventure. But there's actually some things in the story that even as a kid I didn't really like. Alice was talking with the queen, and Alice said that there's no way she could believe in impossible things. And the queen says, when I was your age, I practiced believing in impossible things half an hour every day. And some days I'd believe as much as six impossible things before breakfast. And to my mind as a kid, I really didn't like that because, I mean, why would you believe in something that was impossible? There's something else in here. I just know it. There we go. All right. And yet,
I want this too.
Well, there's a story, a true story about Jesus, and I'm going to talk to the grown-ups about it later. And in that story, they had five loaves of bread, probably bigger than these, but probably kind of flat bread, so not much more. And they had two fish. And Jesus said something impossible to the disciples. He said, feed the people here. We maybe have 30 people, and if I was going to cut this up so everybody could have some, the pieces might get kind of small, especially of the fish sticks. But Jesus took two fish and five loaves of bread, and it doesn't really say much. It says he broke it and he gave it. And all 5,000 men ate, and the people with them, so wives, children, probably 15,000 people in all, ate from not much more than this before Jesus thanked his Father and then did the breaking and passing out. And so he must have been doing some multiplying, like every time it broke, it became two full loaves or something. All I know is that at the end, they gathered up, They gathered up like 12 baskets full of broken pieces. And that's something impossible that I believe. What would you call it if somehow I could break these and we had enough to share with everybody?
What was you fitted for a jacket?
Yeah, it'd be impossible for me, but it wasn't impossible for Jesus. And I want us to appreciate what we can do with God's help. The disciples fed 5,000 men with Jesus' help. And who knows what you and I can do if God directs us and he helps us get it done. So let's pray. Father, I thank you for the impossible things that were miracles you did to help us to understand and believe in your miracles. In Jesus' precious name, amen. All right. You can go. Okay, you might just throw out the fish stick.
Okay.
That goes there. All right. Oh, shouldn't look down, it gets louder. So let's read. Let's just start off with our passage. We are in Mark chapter 6, verses 30 to 44. The apostles gathered around and reported to him all they had done and taught. So that's the returning from the being sent out. Then, because so many were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place. But many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. And this is before cell phones. This is before telegraphs. Really something. When Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. By this time, it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said. "It is already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." But he answered, "You give them something to eat." They said to him, "That would take more than half a year's wages. Are we going to spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat?" "Well, how many loaves do you have?" he asked. "Go and see." And they found out, "We have 5 and 2 fish. Then Jesus directed them to have all the people sit down in groups on the green grass. So they sat down in groups of 150s. And taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up in heaven, he gave thanks and broke the loaves. Then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. He also divided the 2 fish among them, and they all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 baskets full of broken pieces of bread and fish. The number of men who had eaten was 5,000. All right. So there's the passage, the story. Some minor points. Start with minor first. This is the first time that they're called apostles and they've just done the work of apostles in the book of Mark. There's actually the first time they're called apostles in Mark is in chapter 3. And he appointed 12 whom he also named apostles so that they might be with him and so they might be sent out to preach. And in today's passage, the disciples have just come back from being sent out by Jesus. And so verse 30 began, the apostles gathered around Jesus. And first time they have that title, which eventually becomes a title for those 12 men. And later, Paul. The word apostle means sent. Today, God is still in the business of calling people, of sending people across the world, across town, and sometimes just across the street. The need for rest. Jesus said, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." And Jesus recognized the need for rest from time to time. And he tried to get them time of rest. Another time when he said, you know, let's go have a break was when recorded in Mark 7 when he said when they went to the region of Tyre and Sidon. But still, it wasn't totally uninterrupted. But they were seeking rest because it had been so crowded, so hectic. You know, there wasn't even time to eat. Some of us need to hear that it's okay to take a rest, to take breaks from our weekly routine. After all, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. And of course, some of us don't need any reminders to take breaks. Am I right? Oh, you're sleepy. Hey, Jesus' compassion, another minor point, though it could be rather major to you this morning, is that Jesus is Jesus' compassion. Here he is, tired, needing rest, wanting rest, and his men were in need of rest and some good meals. But when they arrive at this solitary place, it's anything but solitary. Like I said before, if there's 5,000 men and their families are there, wives, children, there's probably around 15,000 people out there with them. And I wonder, how would you feel? You've been working hard on a job and the boss finally says, okay, let's take a break and go over there and rest. Oh, man, that's great. And you walk over there to rest, and there's a whole bunch more work waiting for you. Oh, sorry, guys, we got to get back to work. I'd be bummed out. I'd not have a very good attitude about it. But that wasn't Jesus' attitude. He saw them, and he had compassion on them. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. He had compassion on them, and they were his poor lost sheep. So what does he do? Jesus jumps right into teaching the crowd, and given the right opportunity, so should we, whether we feel like it or not. Good shepherds care for the lost. A shepherd has some incentives to care for, to find the lost sheep, because every sheep that he couldn't account for as being eaten by a beast came out of his wages. Every lost sheep came out of his wages. And so that was kind of a costly incentive to keep track of all of them, not just most of them. And another incentive, of course, would go right with that is reputation. And because who's going to hire you next month to watch their sheep if you are kind of lackadaisical about keeping track of the sheep? And, of course, Jesus, as our good shepherd, he cares for us, and he does it without anybody threatening to hold back his wages. And for being careless. However, so he doesn't really hurt his reputation by how he takes care of us, but we can certainly hurt his reputation by how we live our lives. But if our hearts are open to him, he will be our compassionate shepherd, no matter how messed up we are when we come to him for help. Now let's consider what I took as the major point of the story. Jesus commands the impossible. And kind of why. So when they got to this secluded place and the huge crowd, Jesus had his compassion on them, jumped in teaching. Then, you know, it got to be late in the day, and the disciples came up with a very practical idea. Hey, teacher, send them away so they can go get some food. They said, this is a remote place, and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat. Yeah, that was a pretty sensible thing. But it wasn't Jesus' plan. Jesus answered, you give them something to eat. 5,000 men? That's an astounding command. You give them something to eat. So they replied, you know, that would take more than half a year's wages. Are we to go spend that much on bread and give it to them to eat? Jesus was asking, was giving them an impossible command. And the disciples, you know, knee-jerk reaction was half a year's wages to feed all these people. I wonder how much money they even were carrying. It's quite likely it wasn't enough to buy that much bread. But Jesus didn't tell them to buy food. He said, you give them something to eat. And that was an impossible task with only five loaves and two fish. Without God's help, they couldn't do it. Without God's, and that's worth repeating, without God's help, they just plain old couldn't do it. I want you to know that God is still in the business of giving people impossible tasks to do. You know some of the stories, like Moses was commanded to bring God's people out of Egypt, and that was impossible, except with God's help. And Joshua, faced with Jericho, a large walled city, that was kind of an impossible task to defeat them, but God knocked down the walls for him. Israel was oppressed by the Midianites, and Gideon called for men to fight, and he gathered 32,000 men. That sounds pretty good, until you read that the Midianite army was 135,000 men. Then, their odds aren't very good. But that wasn't good enough for God. He said, no, if I let you win with 32,000 people, you're going to take the credit. And he pared them down until they got down to 300 men. What do you think the odds are that 300 men can defeat 135,000? That's pretty impossible, except God gave them victory. And God fought for them. Only God could have 300 men defeat 135,000 Midianites. Hey, has anybody here seen or the movie or read the book Faith Like Potatoes? Okay. I've seen the movie. My mother-in-law had it. And so Wikipedia reports that this is a biographical movie about this guy, Angus Butchman. He was a white Zambian farmer of Scottish origin. He had immigrated to Zambia to escape political unrest and worrying land reforms in Scotland. So Angus looks south for a better life, but many things went wrong for him in Zambia. They're faced with ever mounting challenges, hardships, personal turmoil, and Buchan quickly spiraled down into a life consumed with anger, with fear, and destruction. And they could lose their farm, their whole livelihood. And finally, his wife convinces him to attend a local church where, from the testimony of other farmers, he decides to give his life to Christ. And his life changed completely. Supernatural occurrences began to happen when Angus prays in faith. And he begins giving his testimony. You know, church always encourages all of us to give your testimony to people and stuff. Well, he took that a step further than most. He was going to different towns giving his testimony. And he organized and gathered thousands of people in Kings Park Stadium for a time of unified prayer for the nation and for the land. But he still stood to lose the farm if he didn't have a bumper crop. Now, he had been a farmer of corn and raised cattle. But he decides to plant potatoes. And the local experts in Zambia had told the farmers, don't plant the season. It's been so long since we've had rain. Whatever you put in the ground is just going to dry up and die. Don't bother even planting this season unless you have good irrigation. But Angus felt like God was calling him to plant potatoes. And so they planted all the farm in potatoes. And for a long time, no rain, it was pretty much dusty and dry, and nothing was coming up. It was just bare dirt all over the farm. After a long time, some rain came, and they got a little bit of growth above the ground. Then it came time to harvest their crop. And there was some debate whether they should even bother buying the gasoline to harvest the crop. Okay, God led us. We're going to trust him. We're going to do this. They got fueled up, and they start harvesting the potatoes. And lo and behold, underground was a bumper crop of giant potatoes. And so the farm was saved, and so was the mission work they'd started to do. It was amazing. God's lead, the farm, and their mission work was saved. Now, the question of why. Why does God ask us to do impossible things? And, you might ask Dave, what does God give impossible tasks? Well, it helps us realize our weakness. It helps us, our need. So we come to him and ask for help. You know, no one is really adequate to be a pastor or a Sunday school teacher or a whole lot of other things. And sometimes when we're given impossible tasks, we look at our abilities or our inabilities, our limitations, and we say, I can't do that, I'm out of here. We cave in, we quit. But what the impossible task should do for us is send us to our knees in prayer. God, can't do this alone, please help me. So success through his help, it certainly builds our faith. I remember being young and out of work and worried about how we're going to make ends meet. And these older Christians in the Monmouth Church at the time were just so confident, it's going to be fine, you know, put your trust in God. And I was so envious of their experiences, which already told them they could trust God. But I didn't have that much trust at the time. God not only calls people to do things, he also gives them the power to get them done. So, what is God asking you to do? Nothing? Then consider serving. You know, while getting to know him better, he just might call you to do something impossible, at least impossible without his help. And is he already calling you to do something? Great. How are you responding to it? Can you do it with his help? Are you sure it was a calling? Are you willing to do it?